that Football Folk is doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast, Steve Palazzolo, along with Sam Monson. Sam coming to you live from Radio Row out in Los Angeles, and I'm still in Cincinnati here. And Sam, I don't know how great the connection is going to be between us, but we're going to just apologize in advance if there are any audio snafus. We'll just blame LA, but we're ready to go. We're going to do some NFC offseason team needs and the Tennessee Titans, because I did forget them in our last show.
You did. You hate the Tennessee Titans. And we even got an email from somebody that said that this has been a recurring theme, and they're so disgusted that a loyal listener is going to stop listening because you hate the Titans and left them off.
Yeah, and so I want to personally apologize to Justin, who is no longer listening to us. We did forget the Titans. It is all my fault.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, really Sam is. Should have some checks and balances.
No.
Maybe have like a little checklist to make sure I don't miss anything, but it is my fault. Mm-hmm. I was directing the ship. I was going division by division. I thought we'd hit everyone, and we only hit 15 out of the 16 AFC teams. Look, it's not the first time we've forgotten a team. It's probably not going to be the last time. There's no inherent bias against the Titans.
It's not the first time.
That just means we're going to have to work extra hard here.
It's not the first time we've forgotten a team, and I'm pretty sure it's not the first time we've forgotten the Titans as the team either. So,
good point.
There's a pattern emerging. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. And the pattern appears to be that you hate Tennessee.
Chris and I forgot the Houston Texans last year when we did our team by team offseason review. But I mean, that was
more understandable.
That may have been accidentally on purpose.
Yeah.
So it's always the AFC South. How hard could it be? So yeah, today we're going to go through NFC team needs. Tomorrow we will preview the Super Bowl. And I'm hoping you can find some kind of special guest out there, or someone to join the podcast. Any luck out there so far?
Working on it. We're working on it. I just walked by Devontae Smith a little while ago. He's out in the foyer. Is that you guys use the term foyer in America?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
he's a very small person, like really small.
Foyer? Yeah, I was going to say, how big's he?
I mean, so he's about an inch or so taller than me, but I outweigh him by like 20 pounds at this stage. The dude is skinny.
You think you can cover him?
No, God, no.
If he's got a couple reps in him.
No, I don't think I could cover him, but like, I think I could tackle him. Like, if you just said, grab hold of this dude and watch him try and break out of your tackle, I think I could hold him down. There's not a lot to the man.
Well, good luck with that, Sam. Before we get into the action, don't forget the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on all of these roster moves that we're going to be talking about today, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Whether you're buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions help you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, Sam, let's wrap up AFC offseason team needs with the great Tennessee Titans. Last season, I thought, you know, wide receiver. It was almost like the Titans last offseason waited to handle a lot of their needs. They went beyond free agency. They went into the draft really needing to handle the cornerback position, to handle receiver. They traded for Julio Jones. They drafted Caleb Farley. They end up signing Jack Rabbit, formerly Janoris Jenkins, at corner. So as far as offseason last year, it felt late, but the Tennessee Titans did address a lot of their needs. This time around, you've got a couple spots at linebacker, opening up with Jayon Brown and Rashawn Evans. Moving on, you have Harold Landry hitting free agency off the edge. But then receiver in general also feels like one that the Titans need to address beyond Julio Jones and A.J. Brown.
They're an interesting team because, like, all the moves that they made last offseason, I'm not sure that any of them worked, right? They bring in Julio Jones, and we love that as an idea. You pair Julio Jones with A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, and all of a sudden you've got something special. The dudes, right? Only Julio Jones was basically injured all season long, barely featured at all. When he did play, he wasn't old-school Julio Jones. So now you're like, well, okay, they could really use a wide receiver opposite A.J. Brown. And, you know, we've been – or I mocked them Treylon Burks in my mock draft, another sort of physical freak that could fill that role. But given the amount of money that Julio Jones is on, you would look at that and say they still need that second star player outside of A.J. Brown. Similarly, on defense, right, they threw a ton of money at Bud Dupree. Didn't seem like a great idea at the time. Looks even worse of an idea now. They still need that elite edge rusher. And even more so now that Harold Landry is scheduled to hit free agency. So that's an area of need. The biggest acquisition they made last offseason basically did nothing to address that area. Cornerback is another one. You draft Caleb Farley in the first round. He's injured almost immediately, doesn't play all year. And now, okay, you should expect Caleb Farley to come back. But this was a guy for whom injuries and durability was a problem. And, you know, can you rely on Caleb Farley next year? You probably still need to add corner depth.
Yeah, so maybe throw cornerback depth in there. I know Christian Fulton stepped up last year, and Jack Rabbit has 1 year left on his contract in 2022, so maybe cornerback depth as well. But I think overall, all pass catchers, right? So compliments to A.J. Brown. Could be tight end as well. We thought Anthony Firkser might step up a little bit last year. Didn't necessarily see that. Tight end, wide receiver, and then offensive line also will need to be addressed by the Titans. Ben Jones, really reliable center, hitting free agency. David Quessenberry had a great year last year, kind of out of nowhere solidifying the right tackle spot, but both of those guys hit free agency. So some work to do for the Titans, but I think receiver, linebacker, edge are probably going to be the key ones, and then rounding out the offensive line and then corner.
It's funny, the Titans felt like a team that was kind of overachieving. You know, they ended up with that impressive seeding. They looked like a team that was going to run through and maybe make it deep into the playoffs until they ran into Cincinnati. But it felt like a team that was kind of overachieving. And when you look at the roster and the areas of need that we're talking about now, it kind of feels like that, right? That as much as these guys were somehow able to stitch it all together and perform well, despite those deficiencies in personnel and defense and whatever, all of a sudden you're looking at that and you're saying, well, those deficiencies are still there. They're actually getting worse because free agency is about to take a bunch of players away from them. And now you have a lot of work to do because all the moves you made last year to kind of head off these areas of need and weakness, they didn't really work out. Now, okay, maybe if they all work out this year, like if Julio Jones suddenly gets healthy and goes back to being Julio Jones, if Bud Dupree, you know, becomes a better pass rusher than he's ever been before, if Caleb Farley doesn't get injured, like all of a sudden there's a world where those moves work out and they get those moves in addition to whatever moves they're going to make this offseason. But if they don't, like, they're actually in quite a lot of need.
Yeah, at the same time, impressive job by Mike Vrabel and company finding those depth players and pulling off some wins. So either way, I think I'd be more positive than negative when it comes to the Titans, especially since we forgot them on Monday's podcast. So we have to feel, we got to make Titans fans feel good, right? We made you tune into the NFC offseason needs podcast just to hear about your team. But Titans, they're going to be okay. They're going to be okay, guys. All right, let's get to the NFC. We'll start in the NFC East with the Dallas Cowboys. This is team number one out of 16 in the NFC. We're not going to forget anybody this time around. But when you're looking at the Cowboys, Sam, for all the linebackers that they signed last year, you've got Leighton Vander Esch hitting free agency. You have their entire safety unit, essentially with DeMonte Casey, Jayron Kearse, for whatever you want to call him, a slot/safety. Malik Hooker, they're all hitting free agency, so safety is going to be a big one. And I think receivers, an interesting one as well, right? The thing that made the Cowboys so dangerous offensively was the 3-4-headed monster that they had at receiver. Now you've got Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson both hitting free agency. So receiver depth, I think, something else Dallas needs to address.
Yeah, Dallas, I think, needs to make some decisions about where they allocate money, which free agents they bring back, because they've got, like, key players hitting free agency, and then at the same position, key players who have big contracts that are potentially cuttable, I guess, that they're not necessarily thrilled about. So there's been, you know, talk about how that Amari Cooper isn't necessarily living up to the contract they gave him. Bizarrely, like, we'll focus on Amari Cooper, not, you know, Zeke Elliott. But anyway, like, and it's not an unreasonable point that Amari Cooper probably isn't justifying $20 million a year and, you know, elite number one wide receiver money. On the other hand, you're losing Michael Gallup. You're losing Cedric Wilson, at least at the moment on paper, to free agency. That leaves you with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. If you say, okay, CeeDee Lamb can step in and be that number one guy, we don't need Amari Cooper, well, fine, but now you just have CeeDee Lamb. Like, that's your wide receiver depth chart. That's not good enough, right? So if you're going to make that kind of move with relieving yourself of Amari Cooper's contract, you need to figure out what the backfill is. What do we do to make sure we still have that receiver depth? And then the same thing is true on the defensive line with defensive end, pass rusher. You've got Randy Gregory about to hit free agency. DeMarcus Lawrence is a guy who I think doesn't get the credit that he deserves because his sack numbers haven't been good. And we know that that's not a great way of looking at it, but we also know the teams still look at it that way a lot. And that's why guys like Bud Dupree get the big contract that they have never really shown they're going to justify. So if they look at DeMarcus Lawrence and say, well, we could get by without DeMarcus Lawrence, that he's not living up to that contract. Again, all right, you can make that argument, but I'm going to need, what's the answer? Like, what's the backfill there to ensure that you don't go from having a stable of pass rushers to having nobody outside of Micah Parsons, who now doesn't really have any linebacker help because of all the players you have hitting free agency?
It's an interesting situation there, Sam, because, I always go in thinking, okay, they've got these guys. What do you still need to do? When you have DeMarcus Lawrence, and in his APY, both him and Amari Cooper, over $20 million on their contract, right? Mm-hmm. So they are big deals, but I think Micah Parsons adds some flexibility now to what the Cowboys do. I would want to have DeMarcus Lawrence plus Micah Parsons, and they were really dangerous when they had the third rusher in Randy Gregory, who you said goes, you know, hits free agency. The other part about offensively, remember, Dak has not been a clear-cut top 10 quarterback his entire career. He was top 10 as a rookie. He ranked in the 15 to 20 range for us his second and third years, but that third year is when they got Amari Cooper, and we saw a very distinct difference in Dak's production once he got Amari Cooper. And it's not necessarily just Amari Cooper, it's having dudes to throw to, having playmakers. And I don't want to, if I'm the Cowboys, I don't want to get back to that world where Dak has to elevate other receivers. I want that world where defenses have to look at Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and say, how do I cover these two guys? And oh, by the way, Michael Gallup was probably the best number three when healthy. That is what has made Dallas really explosive. Yeah, they had Gallup hurt and Cedric Wilson stepped in. But again, it's having three legitimate options. And that's a big reason why Dalton Schultz, who also hits free agency, that's why he broke out. He did a nice job working the middle of the field because teams had to account for those two receivers on the outside. So if I'm Dallas, I say this about Kansas City, like, I don't want to see a world where Patrick Mahomes doesn't have enough weapons. I feel the same thing about Dak. So I think making sure that they replenish that receiving core and tight end now with Schultz hitting free agency has to be a huge priority for the Cowboys.
And it also feels like Dak Prescott is one of those quarterbacks that needs that deep stable of receivers more than some other quarterbacks, right? Aaron Rodgers is probably the best example of the opposite type of QB, right? You got one elite guy in Devontae Adams. Outside of Adams, it doesn't seem to matter who you put in there in that Green Bay offense. Aaron Rodgers will make it work. Like, the passer rating, throwing to Alan Lazard or Marquez Valdes-Scantling or anybody else in that offense is still amazing. Rodgers will get those guys the ball, and you don't need three or four guys that are all really good players to get him open targets and make him look really good. Dak Prescott, I think we've seen a pretty tight correlation throughout his career now between, like, the number of really good options he has to throw to and how well he's going to play. So if you're Dallas and you're looking at this and you're sort of on the fence about whether Amari Cooper is worth that $20 million a year or not, like, that should be a really big part of your decision-making process. That, okay, maybe in a vacuum he's not, but this has bigger ramifications than just, is Amari Cooper personally justifying that money? This also affects what Dak Prescott, the guy who's got all, like, the biggest chunk of money assigned to him, this affects how he plays in a really important way, and I don't know that you want to mess with that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Do everything you can to keep those playmakers strong there. The other place that keeps coming up with the Cowboys is defensive tackle. They haven't made like high-end investments there, but they've tried a lot of players over the last couple of years. Tristan Hill, Neville Gallimore, Osa Odighizuwa. All of those guys have had moments where they've been good, but ultimately the PFF grades end up below average. And I think defensive tackle plus the Randy Gregory replacement, probably important for Dallas to address this offseason.
Yeah, I think certainly throw a player in there, but as much as both guys had grades in the 40s this past year, I think both Neville Gallimore, who remember was injured and was playing with this giant scaffolding rig on his arm for the season, and Osa Odighizuwa, I think both those guys have shown flashes to the point where you could realistically predict a better season for each of them next year. And yeah, I wouldn't want to be relying on it 100%, so let's throw another body at it as well. But equally, I don't think that's as glaring a weakness as it looks or as some other positions they're dealing with.
All right, New York Giants are up next. But first, everybody loves when I tell you roses are red, violets are blue. Don't let a wild pube wreck you. Don't lose your connection here, Sam, just because you're over there. You got to listen to the whole thing. Valentine's Day, it's right around the corner. Our sponsors at Manscaped, they're here to give you the best tools to get your balls ready for the special occasion. This V-Day, it's time to join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com, use the promo code PFF, you get 20% off plus free shipping. The holidays went by so quickly. Did you remember to take care of your package with the best tools for the job? The Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped is just the thing every guy needs in their life to make each and every day just a little more special. Is this being broadcast over on Radio Row there? Can everybody hear me? Or is it just
I'm a little bit disappointed that you're not reading this live here in a room full of this many people. It would have added something to the proceedings.
I would scream it from the rooftops. I would say February 13th. It's going to be a national holiday, National Shave Your Balls Day. That's what they want at Manscaped. We can make this all happen. Manscaped created their products for a night just like this. They'll make your V-Day date say, wow, great set of balls you have there. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF. It's over at manscaped.com. 20% off with free shipping. Manscaped.com. Use the code PFF. Join Cupid and shoot your arrow with Manscaped this Valentine's Day. All right, Giants are up next. Thank you. Team number two in the NFC out of 16. Giants, what do they need besides everything? Wink Martindale, by the way, now hired as defensive coordinator. You don't always get defensive coordinators that have distinct styles like Wink Martindale. If he's going to bring this Raven system over, we're talking blitz heavy. We're talking trusting your corners on an island. And so that probably changes the arithmetic as far as you know, a team building effort for the Giants on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it gives the Giants like a pretty exciting coaching setup, right? For the first time in a while, you look at the group that they did bring in, you're actually, all right, like this could make some fun things happen. We talked before about how you connect Brian Daboll with Daniel Jones, and that could actually be an intriguing thing going forward. Wink Martindale for the defense. I'm pretty encouraged by what the Giants have done in their coaching search and their coaching hires and building out that staff. And this team, I don't think, is as bereft of talent as you might think, given how badly the season went for them. Like, there are some pieces in place there. Okay, offensive line, and we start to sound like a broken record at times, right? Offensive line for the Giants, they're one of those teams that definitely needs some serious investment in the offensive line. Andrew Thomas played well for them in his second year, which is both a surprise and a really important development, given how bad he was as a rookie. But this was a guy that we liked coming out as the best tackle in that draft. If he continues that development curve, that's a great sign for them. But like the other four spots need attention, or at least two or three of those spots definitely do. So build that out. But there's some players on defense. The receiving core, I think, is actually talented, even if they didn't have any kind of production last year and couldn't stay healthy, haven't been on the field at the same time. And actually, Andrew Thomas scored more touchdowns than most of them. But like,
it's a group
that I think that can work, right? Kenny Golladay, Sterling Shepard, Kadarius Toney, Darius Slayton. Those guys, I think, can function as a pretty high-level receiving core if that offensive line stays intact and if Daniel Jones can play well enough to get them the ball.
Yeah, I would add, as far as a strength for the Giants, I would look at the secondary. And, you know, if you are going to be playing that man coverage, Adoree Jackson is equipped to do that. James Bradbury's equipped. So that's a good starting spot at corner. So I think that the investment that they've made in the secondary the last couple of years, it is an interesting roster, because I do think if they're healthy at receiver, to your point, and they're healthy at corner, they're pretty strong on the perimeter. At least they have the name value. They've got the potential on the perimeter. But yeah, it's going to come down to that offensive line. I think you nailed it. Left tackle looks pretty solid now with Andrew Thomas. Everything else needs to be addressed. Kadarius Toney looked like a potential star at receiver. I like the way those pieces could work together with Toney and Galladay having different skill sets. Evan Ingram, you're going to lose him. So tight end, you know, with just Kyle Rudolph and Caden Smith left, you know, tight end is a place that can be addressed. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens at edge rusher, because again, looking at what the Ravens did, the Ravens never really had great pure edge rushers because they blitz so much. It's a nice luxury to have, but they never went out and, you know, had a Terrell Suggs or a guy that was going to win a ton of one-on-ones like they did, the old Ravens did. It was a lot of, you know, movable chess piece types and Tyus Bowser and Matthew Judon. And so you've got Azeez Ojulari there. You probably want another option opposite him. But and probably the defensive line probably needs to get a little bit younger with Leonard Williams, you know, getting up there in age. But yeah, I think a lot of the foundation on the perimeter is in place there for the Giants, and I think it's going to be a lot of O-line pass rusher as far as offseason needs go.
And they're in a really great position in the draft with those two high first round draft picks. Like, the Giants are a team. It sounds kind of crazy because of where they are right now and the season they just had, but the Giants are a team, I think, that could put this together really quickly if they hit on a couple of moves. If they nail both those first-round draft picks and, you know, potentially get NFL-ready players with those, like, this is a team that could actually be pretty good next year in a hurry.
Yeah, at 5-7, Sam, I would be interested to see, what if they went both offensive linemen? What if they went tackle center? And all of a sudden you feel much better about 3/5 of your offensive line. Plus, knowing the way offensive linemen develop, sometimes it takes them till year 2, 3, and 4. With the new regime, you've got a little bit of time. We always talk about how a new group likes to start in the trenches. I think that could be an intriguing option for the Giants, is, you know, really attack that offensive line with 2 top 10 picks. All of a sudden that thing can turn around in a hurry.
Yeah, I agree.
So offensive line, it's an offensive line offseason for the Giants, but on paper, things look pretty good as far as receiver and cornerback go. Let's go to the Philadelphia Eagles, our third team out of 16 in the NFC. They've got the 3 first-round picks, which makes them one of the more intriguing teams this offseason to figure out how they're going to build that roster. It felt like they were in rebuilding mode last year. The one thing that I think is different for them versus previous years, they're starting to have a lot more turnover on that defensive line. Their safeties are all hitting free agency, so there's definitely some defensive pieces that need to be overhauled, but there's also a lot of starters returning on the offensive side of the ball. So what are you looking at for the Eagles this offseason?
Yeah, I think they need to rebuild, restock, replenish that defense. When it was at its best, you know, the Super Bowl year, that defense was so scary in terms of what it could do from a pressure standpoint, from deploying 7 guys, all of which could get pressure, from being able to hold up well enough on the back end. Like, all of a sudden you look at that defense and it just doesn't have that kind of, it doesn't have that depth. It doesn't have that kind of impact. It just doesn't have that group. So, you know, you've got the likes of Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox, who were incredible servants of this team for a really long time. I don't know that you can really rely on either one of those guys going forward. Fletcher Cox is still playing reasonably well, but he's now a very expensive, reasonable player. They brought in guys like Javon Hargrave. They drafted Milton Williams. These are guys that are supposed to have, I guess, taken that mantle from Fletcher Cox at this point. Hargrave's rushed the passer very well, but wasn't good against the run. Neither one of them basically is looks likely to replace what Fletcher Cox was at his best. They probably still need to add bodies up front. The linebacker core always needs help in Philadelphia. I think TJ Edwards has solidified one spot, but they could really use some athleticism, some speed, some size at that linebacker spot. And then the secondary always needs help, right? Darius Slay had a really good season. Avante Maddox is fine. They brought in Anthony Harris on like a low, cheap deal. He didn't play very well this year. It's a couple of years for him where he hasn't played up to what we saw earlier in his career. So basically, any level of the defense, pick your spot, that's where they need to go.
Yeah, I agree with everything on the defensive side of the ball there. What about offensively? You know, back-to-back years drafting first-round wide receivers, Jalen Reagor, Devontae Smith, with three first-rounders. Do they go back to that well again just because Jalen Reagor hasn't been great and Devontae Smith, who you just ran into, you know, you said you can tackle him. So, you know, maybe he's not that true number one overall. No, just having a complementary piece to Devontae Smith or an opposite body type like a Drake London or something, you know, or a Treylon Burks could round out their receiving core because they're certainly not done, I don't think, building that side of the ball.
No, I agree. Like, if they, particularly if they find an obvious number one style receiver, if they find a true X type receiver, a big body, a guy that you don't have to worry about against press coverage, a guy that can just dominate from any area of the field, I think, A, they probably don't have that guy yet. B, I think that would have an immediate impact on how well Devontae Smith plays because he is an incredible route runner. He will get separation. He does have fantastic hands and body control and sideline ability. And if you don't have to worry about, or if he doesn't have to worry about press coverage and, you know, elite number one corners just getting aggressive with him, then I think his production goes through the roof as well. Obviously, all of this is contingent on Jalen Hurts continuing to develop and improving. But yeah, like if they find that guy, absolutely a number one wide receiver should still be a target for them. But I think their priorities should all be defense focused.
Yeah, depending on how you classify starters, looking at the PFF depth chart, there's about six returning starters for the Eagles. So between all of their bunch of their linebackers and safeties hitting free agency, and of those guys returning, you have guys like TJ Edwards, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, and Brandon Graham, either aging or just heading into the last year of their contract. So when you talk about needs, it's not just 2022 needs, it's also the future. And if the Eagles had a draft that looked a little bit like 2020 Panthers, which was all defense, I'm not saying that's definitely the way to go, but based off where their needs lie, it wouldn't be all that surprising. So they've definitely got some work to do as far as replenishing that side of the ball.
Well, they're one of the few teams that doesn't need offensive line help.
Yeah, my only thing with that is, you know, Jason Kelce gone, Lane Johnson, you know, as they get a little bit older, Brandon Brooks retiring, it still needs to be addressed a little bit in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
and then how much do you want to be forward-looking and have that youth movement as well?
Sure. I mean, you always need to draft offensive linemen, right, just to keep the conveyor belt going. But like the way that last year worked for them in terms of missing so many guys and forcing other players into action, they actually got development time for a lot of these guys. You know, they drafted Landon Dickerson last year, who ends up playing guard for most of his rookie year. Like that's the center replacement. That's Jason Kelce's heir. He can now step in at center if Kelce's no longer there. And he's already had like a year under his belt playing guard and getting acclimatized to the NFL. So I think they're in a good spot. Obviously, you can always continue to keep drafting offensive linemen. You're never like set long term, but they're one of those teams that you're not coming into this and saying, oh, well, they're one of their first priorities should be overhauling this useless offensive line. Philadelphia is actually in a pretty good spot there.
Is quarterback in need for the Eagles?
I mean, look, I don't think you're ever winning a Super Bowl with Jalen Hurts. So if that's your criteria, then sure, they need to still be in the quarterback market. That being said, I don't think they're doing it this offseason unless, you know, a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers or like one of these things sort of becomes an obvious option for them. And because all these guys have either no trade clauses or are involved in the destination heavily themselves, like unless it like just unfolds in such a way that this thing drops into their lap like a fait accompli, I don't think they're going to be in that market. So do they need one? Probably. Are they in that business right now? Probably not. I mean, do with that what you will.
The thing that I always say that doesn't always seem to come to fruition with three first round picks, if you're the Eagles, you know, the difference between, say, drafting a first round linebacker and then drafting, say, Malik Willis or Sam Howell or Kenny Pickett, just as a flyer, just in case. Obviously, you're going to go with your evaluation, but let's assume we don't know. We don't even know the difference between those guys and Matt Corral and Desmond Ridder and all these top quarterbacks. Do you have this luxury of getting that guy in there? And I keep saying, look, I'm fine with Jalen Hurts on a rookie contract, but 2 years from now, when he might, when the market might command 20 to 30 million for him, I'm not in there. So if I have a rookie quarterback now, have him on a rookie contract, you know, maybe that's how I would play it, right? The value of a first round linebacker, first round defensive lineman, or the payoff of a Malik Willis or a Sam Howell, whoever else it is, on a first contract might be worth it, even for the controversy of having the extra quarterback in the room there. So I will continue to pound that table as we discuss Eagles team building. Let's go to the Commanders now, Sam. That's Washington, formerly the Washington football team. You all in?
I see
on
we
the
haven't updated. I see we haven't updated that in Ultimate. You want to get on that? There's a whole rebrand that's happening, and you've done nothing.
Yeah, we might have to wait until games are played. Yeah, we're working on it. We'll work on the Commanders. Oh, okay. We have other priorities at the moment besides changing the football team's name. Plus, I like
who
WFT.
Is it? Was it Tyler who was telling me yesterday that, like, at the Senior Bowl and stuff, the Washington football team, for like the first half of the week, they were all out there in football team branded getup. And then, like, Wednesday hit or whatever the day was, and everyone broke out Commanders stuff. Like, they had a whole separate wardrobe carried with them, and had to, like, they rebranded along with it the football team.
It probably just arrived in time, right? It just came in time after the announcement. So the Commanders, quarterback obviously going to be the biggest focus for them this offseason. Beyond that, there's a lot for a team that when we were doing this exercise about 2 years ago, it looked like, wow, they've got a lot of issues, but they have they've done a better job at receiver, offensive line. The defense largely disappointed last year. They started to come on a little bit toward the end. But there are some nice pieces in Washington. Obviously, this season, though, it's all about figuring out that quarterback position.
Yeah, and this is what happens when you do what they did last offseason and almost sort of punt the quarterback question for a year, right? The idea was, we don't love where we are in terms of being able to draft one of these guys. We don't think we're going to have a great answer, a quarterback available to us. So let's sign Ryan Fitzpatrick. Let's essentially pass on the position. We'll throw the resources everywhere else, and we'll try and build as good a team around Fitzpatrick as possible on the basis that average quarterback play from Fitzpatrick with what we have around him might be good enough for us to be a good team and win and make the playoffs and go on a run. And I didn't hate that as a gamble. I thought that was a reasonable strategy to employ given where they were. It didn't work out, right? The defense didn't play anything like as well as it did the year before, really justifying the idea that defense is more a product of the quarterbacks you're facing than it is of, like, the talent that you have. They faced a lot better run of quarterbacks this year, and they suffered because of it. And obviously Fitzpatrick got injured almost immediately, so that part of it didn't work out either. But the fact that they deployed the resources elsewhere means that that team is still in a pretty good space. They still don't have the quarterback, but the players that they brought in by not investing at quarterback are still there. So they're actually not in a bad spot if they can find that guy this offseason.
That's the thing. When you look at this depth chart, they still have the name recognition on that defensive line with Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen, who's really emerged as one of the better players in the league. William Jackson was a guy we loved in free agency, had a disappointing season. I think we loved him because of what his upside was, because his high-end play was better than any other corner in that class, but he had been consistent. But I think, again, when you look at it on paper, it's like, okay, you know, he should be a good starting corner. That's not a need necessarily. Him and Kendall Fuller. You probably want some secondary depth, though, you know, to mitigate maybe some of those performances potentially there. And like I said, on the offensive line, you know, drafting Samuel Cosmi, who stepped in. I mean, they replenished their offensive line over these last couple of years. I think playmaker, once you figure out QB, who's the next best playmaker opposite Terry McLaurin? I think Curtis Samuel, yeah, they paid him last year. He's probably best as a number three option, a guy that you could do gimmicky stuff with and work him out of the slot. He's not probably a true number two wide receiver. So I think number two wide receiver, even with De'Ami Brown drafted last year, number two wide receiver opposite Terry McLaurin, I think should be a huge need as well for whoever that quarterback is.
Yeah, I think, again, their receiving core looks a lot better immediately as soon as you get an upgrade over Taylor Heinicke, a quarterback. So part of it, I think, will be a development just by having a better QB. But yes, Terry McLaurin should be a superstar. They don't have that clear high-end number two. There's the possibility one of these guys emerges with a better QB, but that's absolutely somewhere they should be targeting.
And then maybe a little bit of linebacker depth. I know they drafted Jamin Davis last year. He was up and down as a rookie. Cole Holcomb, been inconsistent early in his career. He heads into the last year of his contract, so linebacker depth, I think, in Washington. Again, last year at this time, we were saying D-line looks good. Investment in secondary looks good. They went into the draft with a linebacker need, drafted one in the first round, but still potentially somewhere for the Commanders to address.
You're just going to straight up ignore the fact that they brought back David Mayo for about $5.
The great David Mayo. Let's see how many wins. He was worth 0.02 wins last year, but averages a tenth of a win at linebacker over the last three seasons. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. You're right. David Mayo solidifying the linebacker core for the football team. Well, look at that. We're four teams in. We're a quarter of the way. Four out of 16 in the NFC. Let's go to the North and the Chicago Bears. Ryan Poles.
I like
that
you're keeping a tally.
I have to.
I like that you're keeping a tally. That means there's a much smaller chance of us just forgetting a team and having people stop listening because of
it. I mean, you think I'm going to count properly here? This is team number five. I could easily next time be like, oh, we're at number seven.
I mean, you could, yeah. I'm not saying it's a flawless plan. I'm just saying it's better than not doing it at all and forgetting the Titans.
I need you to keep me in check here, too. Team number five, the Chicago Bears. It is, when you look at their depth chart, when you look at what's leaving.
There's nobody coming back.
There's a lot, man. There's a lot of issues. And I think when you look at the Bears team over the last couple of years, I've said this a bunch, as much as you want to say it's Matt Nagy and they never found a quarterback and this and that, the roster has progressively gotten worse. So new GM Ryan Poles got a lot of work to do. Allen Robinson back to free agency once again. So I think receiver is going to be a huge one. And it's always going to be about Justin Fields' development. Receiver, offensive line, and again, the defense has had a lot of turnover as well these last couple of years.
I haven't looked at all these depth charts yet, but I haven't seen one like this yet where, like, there's nobody on offense. Everybody's leaving.
Yeah.
There's Justin Fields. He stays. You cut your quarterback.
For clarity, in the great PFF IQ, NFL potential team customers, we've created depth charts where you can click a year in advance and see everybody grayed out who's no longer under contract. So as we look at these depth charts, the Bears have a lot grayed out. They have a lot of last year's depth chart not returning for next year at various positions.
And obviously, you know, they can bring these guys back. Like, they don't hit free agency for another month. They're not gone yet, so they can still retain these guys. But right now, like, Justin Fields is there. David Montgomery is still under contract. Tevin Jenkins, who they drafted last year. Obviously, Cody Whitehair is still there. Cole Kmet, Darnell Mooney. That's about it. Like, everybody else is gone. So that's three-fifths of your offensive line is not even under contract anymore. None of the depth players, like, anywhere are still there. Don't worry, though. Nick Foles is still under contract, so it's not a total loss. But, wow, I haven't seen one side of the ball that's that bereft of just simply bodies under contract as the Bears.
Yeah, and again, I think this has been the issue, right? I mean, this has been the issue in Chicago where I always go back to 2018 where they had that really nice defense and it had great depth and their secondary, they slowly, you know, guys either got old or they moved on in free agency and they, you know, they replenished a little bit with a Jalen Johnson who's solid, but not enough. Right. Starting on the offensive side of the ball, though, I think that's where most of the focus is going to be. You have Darnell Mooney, who I love Darnell Mooney. I mean, he's fast. He could do a lot of different things. I don't think you're looking at Mooney as a true number one wide receiver. So you want to have a high end option and Allen Robinson either returning or replacement. But you still need other receivers. Cole Kmet at tight end. He's OK. He's probably not as good as they were hoping as a second round pick. He's more of a run blocking tight end anyway. So you could use a pass catcher there. And then let's say Tevin Jenkins, last year's second rounder, steps in at one of the tackle spots. We still don't know how good he's going to be, but the other tackle spot is a huge question mark. And, you know, two out of the three interior spots. So O-line and playmaker, man, it's got to be top priority, I think, for the Bears this offseason.
Yeah. I mean, look, the defense needs a lot of work as well, but you need to do everything possible to try and help Justin Fields. I mean, last year, the single biggest indictment of the Matt Nagy regime of the job he was doing if you the single biggest indictment outside of him talking to the media, which was by far the worst thing he did last year. But outside of that, the worst thing he did was really didn't do a great job of helping Justin Fields out in any way, shape, or form. I think some of the things people were saying about that were a little bit overdone, but they really didn't help Fields. This year, that has to be what everything is about right now. You've got a quarterback. He's shown more than enough to make you think that he can be the guy going forward. He still had like a top 10 big-time throw rate in the NFL, which is way better than any of the other rookies were able to achieve. So now you need to help that guy. You need to give him an offensive line. You need to make sure he's not running for his life every play. You need to give him more than Darnell Mooney to throw at. I mean, they just need to construct an offense around him stat. And like they have a lot of work to do because there isn't one. Like there's hardly anybody under contract on that side of the ball.
And then you mentioned, yeah, defensively, Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn, the only two players in the front seven, starters in the front seven, signed beyond 2022. So an influx of youth as Akeem Hicks, you know, he's been their best interior defensive lineman for a few years now. He's even dropped off a bit since his peak in 2018. So big dudes in the middle are needed. And safety is another place where Tayshawn Gibson has been, you know, they keep bringing him back. But safety and cornerback depth as well. So there's a lot of work to do in Chicago. Do you think they focus mostly on the offensive side, though, given the offensive line and receiver question marks?
I think they should. I mean, like I said, this entire offseason needs to be about throwing everything you have at helping Justin Fields, making sure that guy's life is as good as it can be next year so that you have an answer about him, if nothing else. Like, you find out through next year's play if Justin Fields is going to be the guy or not. And maybe, you know, the worse a job you do at that, the worse an evaluation you're going to get. So you're only harming your own analysis of how good he can be if you don't give him as good a chance as possible. So if you need to park defense for a year and just throw everything possible at the offensive side of the ball, fine, do it. Like that'll have to, it's not an ideal situation, but it's better than, I think, hedging and splitting your resources between both sides and neither one of them being any good.
The other parts of that, Matt Eberflus taking over at head coach, he did a pretty good job in Indianapolis getting the most out. When you play this conservative zone-heavy defense, you can kind of hide lesser talented players, and it might be the best strategy for the Bears, right? Focus on offense,
yeah.
Stitch it together defensively.
But yes, Eberflus has a history of kind of, I guess, overperforming with players that aren't necessarily that talented on defense as a collective. But on the other hand, he's a defensive-minded head coach, and maybe he comes in and goes, I need a lot of talent on defense. Like, yeah. I don't know, how does that tension work, right? Are they going to be able to convince him that you need to throw all these resources at the offensive side of the ball because Justin Fields is everything next year? Or is the fact that he's a defensive-minded guy going to skew some resources towards that side of the ball?
It's a really good point, and I think it's when people talk about all these interviews and all that stuff, the relationship between the GM and the head coach is so huge because they have to be able to – they're creating a roster together. They're creating a top 53 together and doing what's best for the organization. We're going to move on to the Lions, but first, the moment we've been waiting for since September, it's finally here. In honor of the big game, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56, is giving new customers 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in New York, meaning you can bet from almost a third of the country. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, just play DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest for Super Bowl 56. New customers could get a free shot at $1 million top prize with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Get 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. It's promo code PFF at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. Must be 21 or older. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, Sam, on to the Lions. And I think, you know, if you're a Lions fan, last year at this time, what are their needs? Everything. And then you go into the season, and it's like, all right, we invested in the trenches with Penei Sewell, Alim McNeil. You focused on the big guys in year one. And I think a best-case scenario coming out of 2021 is seeing young players emerge and seeing someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown as one of the best rookie receivers last year. Boom, all of a sudden, one of those receiver spots looks pretty good now going into 2022. There are some positives coming out of the
the Lions' season, where now they're picking number two overall.
Yeah, last season was all about building in the trenches, both offense and defensive line. And I think they were we were saying all last season that the logic behind that, or at least a piece of the logic behind that, was that those positions take longer to develop to reach their potential in the NFL than other positions, right? We've seen how quickly wide receivers can hit the ground running at the NFL level and be impact contributors basically from day one. The same thing is not usually true on the offense and the defensive line. Okay, there are guys that buck that trend, and Tristan Wirfs and Rashawn Slater in the last 2 years have kind of, you know, they may be skewing things a little bit, and you go, oh, maybe. But the point is, they drafted those guys, and you don't necessarily need to have seen them be amazing year one to still be confident that they'll develop. And I think that's Penei Sewell played really well, actually, on the offensive line, both at left and right tackle. But the same thing is not necessarily true with Alim McNeil and Levi and Onwuzurike on the defensive side of the ball. But I don't think you should panic, right? I think they should have expected those guys to maybe take a little bit of time, and next year they'll be better. So you don't go back to the well this time. You stick with the plan and you say, now's the year we deploy resources on the edges and we go for wide receivers and we go for cornerbacks. And, you know, the fact that Amon-Ra St. Brown made the most of his opportunities last year and said, hey, I can be your slot receiver going forward. Fantastic. That's like a bonus. But now you need to go find that number one. Like, now you need to go find those top two guys on the depth chart at receiver, and ideally, you know, an elite cornerback, because Jeffrey Okuda and Amani Oruwariye, they haven't really been that guy yet either. Melifonwu still hasn't shown it. So they've thrown kind of little bits and pieces of resources at cornerback, but you still need to find that guy.
Yeah, there's obviously still a lot of holes here on the Lions, and then the big one that we haven't addressed yet is quarterback. So Jared Goff, presumably not the answer going forward. You know, they got him as a bridge starter, man. I mean, that's the move. Bridge starter in order to procure those first-round picks that the Rams gave up to them. And the Rams were mean, man. They're about to, you know, potentially win the Super Bowl. They're going to give them pick 31 or 32 in the first round rather than something in the 20s, but how do the Lions address QB? I don't think they're going to be taking one at two. I think that's where you're talking defensive line and Aiden Hutchinson, or, you know, something that's going to help somewhere on the defensive side of the ball, most likely. And then circling back and, you know, is there a quarterback that they like at the back end of the first that they could develop behind Goff?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. Like, when in this multi-year process was the quarterback supposed to come, right? Like, what's... It looks like their strategy was trenches year one, perimeter year two, and then QB year three. Like, does the QB then come in and sort of step into this team that's ready, like immediately ready made to be good? Or was the quarterback always supposed to come in year two? And maybe that, you know, that's when it's supposed to happen. And they've got this, if that's the case, they have this kind of slightly weird situation where they're picking it like the top of the first round and the bottom of the first round, and the QBs maybe are all likely to go somewhere in the middle. It feels to me like the quarterback isn't supposed to come until the end of all this, right? The vision was, let's construct this team, and Jared Goff is like the sacrificial lamb to just take all the beating while we're building this thing. And then we drop kick Jared Goff out of the team, and we bring in the quarterback who just steps in and this to a good situation right away. If that's the case, they're going wide receivers, they're going cornerbacks. Jared Goff maybe eats it for another year, and then we figure out who the QB is next season. Now, maybe they draft that guy, though, this year, and, you know, he develops for a year behind Goff before they throw him into the situation. But obviously, quarterback is a need. The question is just whether they're going to attack it now versus 12 months' time.
It would be intriguing not to attack it now, based off what we think about the draft class, right? That there's five guys who could go in any order, and there's not a clear-cut guy, and who knows how good the Lions are going to be this year. They have two first-round picks again next year, their own and the Rams once again. So they might be in better position to draft a better player and hope that somebody emerges in college that's a clear-cut, top-10 caliber quarterback.
The weirdness of the quarterback group this year also sort of opens up those possibilities of, like, you know, there are going to be 32 different rankings of all these guys, right? There are going to be quarterbacks that most teams love, some teams hate, some teams love, most teams hate, all those kinds of things. And maybe with the Lions picking at the bottom of the first round, there's a guy that falls all the way to them that actually they think is really good. And they end up kind of quote unquote, lucking into a quarterback that they think is amazing that everybody else doesn't like and let slide in that first round. I mean, in my mock, I had Malik Willis slipping all the way to the Lions. I, based off talk and the Senior Bowl and just the buzz around the Super Bowl here, I doubt that happens. Like, I think Malik Willis ends up going a lot higher than that. But that's the kind of scenario, right? Maybe it's not Malik Willis. Maybe it's a Kenny Pickett because of his tiny little hands, you know, with the double-jointed thumb, right? Just can't grip the ball. Maybe it's not. But one of those guys could end up slipping as far as them, and all of a sudden that changes the plan, right? Because you just weren't expecting that guy to be available at 31 or 32.
But that's – and at 31 or 2, you're securing that fifth-year option. And it could be for the second or third best quarterback in this draft, which might be worth
according to your board, yeah.
And again, if you think about it through the lens of, okay, what if they draft Kenny Pickett, say, and he's not that good? The alternative is, okay, maybe we missed out on a late first round receiver or a corner or another defensive lineman or whatever it is. But there's the upside of a Kenny Pickett hitting, being on a first contract is huge. If he doesn't hit, okay, we come back next year and we draft another quarterback. And chances are there might be somebody around the league who gives you a second rounder for Kenny Pickett or whatever it might be. And, you know, you can mitigate some of the damage, but the payoff of having that quarterback is huge, and picking late first round, the Lions have a chance to secure that fifth year option. So it'll be interesting to see what they do at quarterback. Obviously that's going to be a huge priority. And I think the perimeter, as we talked about, receiver and corner, a place that they absolutely need to attack this offseason. All right. That's six teams done in the NFC. Six out of 16. That's 37.5% of the way there, Sam. We're making great time. Green Bay Packers are next. I overuse the word fascinating. I apologize. Fascinating and interesting. We'll work on the thesaurus. But few off seasons going to be more fascinating or interesting than the Green Bay Packers, starting with what Aaron Rodgers is going to do, Devontae Adams hitting free agency. Will they franchise him and make him come back? Will they make him come back without Aaron Rodgers and really, you know, piss him off? There's a lot of potential turnover in Green Bay this year.
Compelling, captivating. You know, come on, it's not that hard. I agree. They're in that spot, right, where kind of where they were a year ago, which is the idea that Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams might depart at the same time and could potentially go somewhere as a package deal and all this kind of thing. Like, this is still on the table, and it's getting more and more real now because Devontae Adams is scheduled to be a free agent right now. I've said before, I don't think they should let him go, whether or not Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback next year. If Aaron Rodgers is still in Green Bay, obviously he still needs his favorite target, because for years the criticism has been it's Devontae Adams and nobody else. Well, the one thing that could be worse than that is not having Devontae Adams. And all of a sudden, it's just Aaron Rodgers and nobody else. So that's not good. And equally, if Rodgers is gone, you can't turn the keys over to Jordan Love and say, good luck, there's nobody here. Like, it's just you, because Devontae Adams left town. So they have to keep him. Like, franchise him, extend him, do whatever it takes. I just can't see Devontae Adams leaving the Packers, because their area of need, or their need in that area, is too acute without him. So as much as he's scheduled to hit free agency, I think they need to keep him. Whether or not he's there, the age-old issue of they need more receiving help. So they still need, I think, to grab receivers, even if Devontae Adams is there. And then, you know, outside of that, I don't think they're in the worst situation in the world. They can add bits and pieces, and they can, you know, attack depth on the defense, but like, this is a pretty good roster.
Yeah, I mean, Valdez-Scantling, I mean, their receiver help in general, I think, is huge, no matter who the quarterback is. If Aaron Rodgers is coming back and Devontae Adams is coming back, we're still looking at receiver help for the Packers. If those guys aren't coming back, we're still looking at receiver help for the Packers. So I think pass catchers, certainly high priority there. Defensive side of the ball, Devondre Campbell, who was one of the better linebackers in the NFL, just had a one-year deal, and he's back on the market. So linebacker, potentially an issue again for the Packers. That seems like an annual thing until Campbell came in and solidified it. Last year at this time, it seemed like the biggest thing was cornerback too. I think they did a pretty good job with Eric Stokes in the first round. He was fine. So cornerback probably less of an issue now than it was last year. If you're forward-looking, though, Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos, getting into the last year of their contracts as safeties, maybe just adding depth there, so secondary depth in general. But I think it's another place where the flashy positions, the receivers and tight ends for the Packers, are going to be top priority.
Be really interesting to see what the kind of market, what they do with Devondre Campbell, right? He was an all-pro caliber off-the-ball linebacker this year that came basically out of nowhere to achieve that. You know, rank average at best PFF grades throughout his career, all of a sudden jumps up to the 80s to the 90s in terms of grading, was on peanuts because he hadn't shown any reason to be on anything more than peanuts for the last few years. Like, do they bring him back on the cheap? Is he all of a sudden, because of an all-pro caliber season, going to command big money? Like, does he escape because of that and go get a monster deal somewhere else? That'll be an interesting thing to watch, is whether they can get him back, like, in the building for a reasonable sum of money. Because if they can, I think they should absolutely attack it.
I'll ask the same question I asked about the Eagles. Is quarterback a need for the Packers? If they trade Rodgers, is it definitely Jordan Love's team for at least a year?
I mean, I can't see how you could not give him the job at this point. Like, can you imagine? You draft Jordan Love, essentially a slap in the face to Aaron Rodgers, right? We're not giving you wide receiver help. We're drafting your replacement instead, and we're trading up to do it. And we're like, and then you play so well that, all right, well done. We want to keep you. It's great. But if you then leave, now we're just not even going to give the chance to Jordan Love. You would look like idiots. I mean, whether or not it's the right decision, like, there's, you know, the sunk cost fallacy and all that kind of stuff. You couldn't. You really couldn't do that without everybody in that building just leaving and drowning themselves in a lake. It would be the dumbest thing any team has done in, like, the last 10 years.
So you heard it here first. Not a quarterback need in Green Bay. It's either Rodgers or it's Love. Big time receiver, tight end need there. So get them some playmakers. All right, let's move on to the Minnesota Vikings. It's another compelling one, Sam, because you got Kwesi coming in as general manager. You've got Kirk Cousins at quarterback with 1 year remaining. Is quarterback a need in Minnesota? Are they going to play the long game? When you have a new group, do you automatically think we got to play the long game? Kirk Cousins is going to have value, right? Kirk Cousins is going to have value for a team like, send him back to Washington, right? Send him to Pittsburgh. Send him to another team that is quarterback desperate, and you can look to the future if you're Minnesota. Also, the defensive side of the ball still needs a lot of love there as well.
Have you just pivoted from interesting and fascinating to captivating?
Everything's captivating. And
okay,
The next division's going to be compelling, though, because that's
we didn't fix the problem. We just changed it. The Vikings obviously do need a quarterback, I think, at some point. The question is when. They're still tied to Kirk Cousins for a little bit. I don't know whether you draft his replacement now, whether you go looking for his replacement now and try and sort of ease that transition, let him become a bridge quarterback, or whether you just deal with it down the line and you say Kirk Cousins is good enough for the moment. We're stuck with him anyway, so we might as well play that out and go fix everything else, and then we can try and find that QB. So, yeah, like, it is a need. I'm just not sure if it's one they address this offseason. The offensive line in Minnesota is always a need. Like, they've attacked it bits and pieces. I think Christian Darrisaw is a fix at left tackle. There's a couple of players I think that will be viable that are fine going forward. They still need to get better as a group. They need to get that unit towards being average as a baseline. It's not quite there yet.
Center and right guard, probably the two places. Yeah. They are better than they've been, though, I think.
Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden, Christian Darrisaw, I think, is a legit left tackle. Brian O'Neill, obviously, is a legit right tackle. I think Ezra Cleveland is fine at left guard. Again, if he's your weakest link, you're in a good spot. Right now, he isn't, and that's what that's the thing they need to change, right? If they need to go from Ezra Cleveland being one of the three better players to being one of the three worst, essentially. The defense, it's just been eroded. It's a little bit like Philadelphia, and over the same kind of time frame, that 2017 group that was one of the best defenses in the league just isn't anymore. They need cornerbacks desperately. Like, I'm not sure there's a single corner on this roster that should be anywhere near playing time right now. And that's obviously something that needs to change in a pass happy league.
Just looking at their defensive line too, all the money that they spent on Michael Pierce and Dalvin Tomlinson. Again, if you're forward looking, they've got 1 year left on their respective contracts. You know, someone opposite Danielle Hunter as a pass rusher. I think the entire defensive line needs an influx of youth. I am interested to see where Kwesi's head is at, though, as far as this roster. There's a lot of guys making between $10 and $20 million per year, including Dalvin Cook, including Danelle Hunter, including Dalvin Tomlinson, Adam Thielen. Are you really going to go full rebuild? Open up money for when you have to re-sign Justin Jefferson? Figure out what you're going to do at quarterback. Do they punt on this year? Do they take some of these assets and create even more needs by trading them away just to get draft picks? That's what I'm interested in. And this is the entire NFC North. If Rodgers leaves, this entire NFC North is in like full rebuild mode, all four teams. So then if you're the Vikings, do you say, well, now all of a sudden we've got the best quarterback in the division and Cousins, and we actually have the best situation? It's an interesting strategy for 2022, the way the Vikings play this, given their division, but also given that it's a whole new group and they could want to start from scratch.
We've been saying this for years, that the Vikings with Kirk Cousins and Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman, they've been trapped in this world of being average or maybe even above average, but with no pathway from above average to Super Bowl winning, right? It was just that there was no road that connected the two. And it feels like the ownership there was kind of late in realizing that, you know, that there was just no pathway from where they were to where they wanted to go. They eventually realized that they clean house, they get rid of everybody. You bring in Kwesi, you bring in, new coaching, Kevin O'Connell. Those are pieces in place that should be able to take you somewhere completely different. But in order to get there, you might have to knock it all down to build it back up again, right? You might not be able to go from where you started to where you want to go without completely tearing this thing to pieces. And I don't know if they've signed up for that, right? Like, was that part of Kwesi's pitch?
That's when I would love to know what did he sell them on and say, look, right. You've got 6 to 8 really good pieces that are great to build upon, but they're even better to trade. They're better for the rest of the league. Yeah. To value them, and we're going to draft 12 to 15 times and be a little bit more thrifty and rebuild this entire thing in Minnesota.
Because this would be a really interesting team if they got the kind of license that Detroit got to do that kind of overhaul, right? If they came in and year one was like stripping this thing bare and getting rid of every asset that isn't Justin Jefferson, essentially, right? Like, that's the one guy who's not moving anywhere. Everybody else can go for the right offer, and we're going to get a million high-end draft picks. We're going to start stocking this thing, and we're going to rebuild from whatever, you know, whichever methodology, whichever pathway Kwesi thinks is the way to do it, whether it's replicating what Detroit did, whether it's attacking slightly different position groups first. But who knows if he even has that license? Like, maybe the Wilson said, yeah, you can do what you want, but like, we expect this team to be competitive next year because we were competitive last year, even though it wasn't good enough. Like, that they are going to be that's a really tough spot to be in, and we have no idea what license he's got to do that.
And so here's what I'll say for needs for the Vikings: players who are going to be contributing 2 and 3 years from now. The opposite of what the Texans did last year at this time and just bringing in a whole bunch of stop gaps. Find defensive line depth, get that next receiver that, you know, when Adam Thielen becomes too expensive or, you know, too old, get that next receiver in there, and then think about next quarterback as well, because I don't know if they're going to sign Kirk Cousins long-term. Maybe they will. Maybe they're evaluating him completely different than maybe the league, but I'm thinking long-term here for the Vikings. Get players who are going to be good 2 and 3 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you look at that and you say needs. It realistically is pretty much everything except Justin Jefferson. And even, you know, wide receiver, you need somebody other than Justin Jefferson. So there's no position where you would say they don't need to touch it. None.
All right, let's go to the Atlanta Falcons. We're halfway through the NFC. That's 8 teams by my count. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. On to the NFC South, Atlanta Falcons, another team, I think, very much in transition. A lot of holes and needs on the defensive side of the ball. And then, you know, for the first time in years, you're looking at pass catchers. You know, is Calvin Ridley a guy that they're going to end up trading? You know, it might make sense, you know, to try to get something back in return for him. But if that's the case, Russell Gage hits free agency. Julio Jones is long gone. So I think receiver is going to be a big one for the Falcons this offseason. And what do they do at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, they basically don't have any receivers. Kyle Pitts is the only guy there. And theoretically, he's supposed to be a tight end. Like, he's he's your only receiver at this point of any description. Yeah, that's definitely somewhere they need. They're another team that, like, that offensive line is okay, but there's a couple of problem spots that they need to shore up. Maybe they have faith that the guys they have on the roster can still get better and improve that, but I wouldn't bet on it. And then the whole defense needs help. Like, it's still just Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett is out here doing the Lord's work, like plowing away individually, trying to make this happen by himself, and it's just not happening. God, the guy needs some help. Would you find some defensive linemen to put around him? Would you find some linebackers that can get it done behind him? Like, okay, AJ Terrell was a good pick. He's had like an all-pro caliber season. Great, but it's two guys on a defense of 11 players. There needs to be more than that.
Sometimes it's so tough, man, when you have an edge rusher has just been an annual issue for the Falcons for the last 7 or 8 years, from Vic Beasley to Tack McKinley to taking a flyer on Dante Fowler. Like, they paid Dante Fowler legitimate money, and none of them have produced. So edge rusher, once again, if you're just saying what's the weakest position on this team, that's probably it. So edge rusher is going to be a huge one for the Falcons. All of their safeties are hitting free agency as well. So AJ Terrell needs some friends. Grady Jarrett needs some friends. That's it. Everybody around both of those players. But I think, you know, there's already rumors that Grady Jarrett and Calvin Ridley could be available via trade. And it wouldn't be I think that would probably be smart for the Falcons to try to get as many assets as possible for the two big pieces that they have. And then who knows if they could trade Matt Ryan and make that work. But yeah, they definitely hamstrung themselves the way they restructured his contract.
Yeah, you look at, there are some teams where you look at it and say, this team could be quite good quite quickly. And the Falcons, I don't think, are one of them. And that's even more difficult because they were actually okay last year, right? They were in the playoff hunt until like the last week or two of the season. So it's a bizarre and had no business being there. Like, it was bizarre how quote unquote successful this team was last year, despite how bad that roster is. It's worse now because a lot of the successful players from last season are hitting free agency. Maybe they bring back the likes of Cordarrelle Patterson and that can help them out. But yeah, it's not often you see a team sort of commit to a rebuild on a delay, right? Usually if that's happening, it's happening year one of a new regime. Like we just talked about with Minnesota or with Detroit, you come in, it's like, this thing needs to be ripped to pieces and we start it over. The Falcons would be doing that a year into the new regime, which would be unusual. So I'm in a way, I just can't see them doing that because I can't think of that happening too many times before. So they just need to start hammering resources at the areas that are really weak. Like, maybe they do trade away a Grady Jarrett just to be able to throw three picks and some spending money at wide receiver and bring in weapons, or to just plow resources into the defense. But they need receivers, and then they need every area of the defense.
But all of a sudden, it's a similar question that the Vikings are asking themselves, right? Like, is the division... Are we actually close to being the best team in the division? Like, this is a legitimate question that the Falcons can ask themselves. Now that Tom Brady has retired, and we have no idea what the quarterback situation looks like. Is that crazy, Sam?
No, it's not crazy. But again, like, they're one of those teams where the follow-up question is, yeah, but, like, to what end? Could you win the division next year? Yes. Could you win a playoff game? No. Like, what's the point? You know what I mean? Like, the Vikings and the Falcons, and there's a couple other teams, like anybody in the NFC South is going to be in this bucket where you're like, could you realistically win the division and make the playoff next year? Yeah, sure, because the division is terrible. Like, this was like the NFC East a few years ago. Somebody could end up getting this division with 6 wins, but like, okay, then what's your plan? Because you're going to run into an actual team in the playoffs and you're a 6-win team is not taking them down. And even if it does, it's not taking down the next team. Like, you're not stumbling your way from like a 6-11 team to the Super Bowl. Like, that's just not happening. So the team like the Falcons, the Vikings, all of a sudden the division might open up in such a way that you could stumble your way to winning it. And that's great. But like, certainly with the Vikings, because they've just axed the group that was in the playoff contention every year, but they got rid of them because they were never taking them to a Super Bowl. Like, that should be the goal for every NFL team. I think you can make arguments that it isn't. You know, there are teams out there that are just looking to launder money, essentially, right? It's like a tax break We're just, as long as the bills keep ticking over and I can write off a giant chunk of cash, I'm cool, right? And if we make the playoffs, if we're respectable, then I don't get to be embarrassed in front of my other billionaire buddies at the owners' meeting. Everything's rosy. I don't need to be winning Super Bowl championships. But really, like most teams, that should be the goal, right? Like let's try and build a team that can take home a ring. And if you're doing that, winning the division because everybody else just got bad enough that you take it by default, I just don't see what that achieves.
I think you bring a lot of value here at the PFF NFL podcast, but one of the best things you do is getting into the psychology of the billionaire, you know, something you've really embraced recently here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just don't want to embarrass myself in front of my billionaire buddies. Give me a playoff team.
I mean, look, that's where,
Blank wants to go, the Falcons might be able to pull that off next year.
You know that phrase of like dress for the job you want, not the one that you have, you know? I'm putting myself in the mind of a billionaire so that once the money arrives, I'm just good to go, right? Somebody wants to throw me $1 billion right now, I'm already there mentally. I can make it work. Just give me the chance.
No, because I've already heard you're not the owner that wants championships. You just don't want to embarrass yourself. You're content with like 8 wins a year. So
I mean, there's a bunch of them like that. Look, I just don't want to be embarrassed in front of my billionaire buddies. That's all I'm looking for.
I'm putting quarterback high on the need list here for the Falcons. You got to get that next guy. I don't think it's going to be Matt Ryan for much more than this season. So Atlanta, a lot of everything, more secondary help and receiver. And then, yeah, QB needs to be on the priority list here. That's 9 teams. Let's move on to the Carolina Panthers. Another team. Quarterback has to be high. Offensive line absolutely needs to be on the list. I think those are the biggest priorities in Carolina right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Panthers are the things that went wrong last year, fix them. Like quarterback, the Sam Darnold experiment, disaster, mistake, glaring error, you know, obvious reaping of what you sowed. That needs to be fixed. You need to have a better answer than Sam Darnold this year. And the offensive line, the prioritization of the likes of Pat Elflein and Cam Irving. Massive error, mistake, obvious problem. It's exactly what happened. So you need to fix 4/5 of your offensive line. You need to find a quarterback. And then you need to, you know, potentially retain DJ Moore or make sure that you have some answers at receiver, because that was the one strength of this group. And it wasn't enough because the offensive line, the quarterback was bad. So you need to make sure that that group doesn't disappear at the same time as improving the other areas.
We've referenced PFF WAR quite a bit here. You know, again, wins above replacement, how, you know, in currency that you could compare across positions. The Panthers received negative WAR, so below replacement level play from 3/5 of their offensive line last year, including both of those free agents, Cam Irving and Pat Elflein. And this wasn't a surprise because Irving and Elflein also provided negative WAR the previous 3 seasons of their respective careers. So it was in line with their previous career baseline. No Panthers starting offensive lineman graded above 70 other than the one guy that we think is pretty good, Taylor Moton, right, at right tackle. So the other 4 spots, this is like the Giants, right? You've got 1 starter. The other 4 can all use upgrades. The other second-best offensive lineman, Matt Paradis, he hits free agency, the starting center. So 4/5 of the offensive line needs to be addressed here for the Panthers. None of that matters if they don't find a viable quarterback or an upgrade over Sam Darnold. So that's where it starts and ends. Other than that, I thought Robbie Anderson had a really weird year at receiver because he's one of those guys that should be a really nice complement to DJ Moore. Maybe it's the quarterback situation that hurt his production, but it seemed like they had been building a pretty nice receiving core, but maybe that's something else that needs to be addressed. And then they're still looking for corners opposite last year's first rounder JC Horn. They traded for CJ Henderson. They traded for Stephon Gilmore last year. Gilmore hits free agency. Dante Jackson hits free agency. Jury's still out on Henderson. So I think corner or 2 is another thing for Carolina to take a look at this offseason.
Yeah, and they're in a really tough spot in terms of like the capacity and the resources available to make all these changes and address all these problems. I mean, ultimately their entire offseason almost needs to start and finish with what is our pathway to a quarterback, because like Sam Darnold is stuck there next year anyway with the 5th-year option that they picked up, which is arguably another mistake. Like, you need, where are we getting the quarterback from? Are you grabbing one at the top of the draft this year when you didn't a year ago? It would be a reach potentially based off where we think the quarterback's going to land this season. But you need a plan, because right now it's difficult to kind of see where this Carolina team is pointed.
Yeah, so they've got the 6th overall pick as of right now, and they don't pick again until 105. So when you're talking about a team that has all of these holes, man, that is not good. That is not
particularly because if 6 is seen as a reach for any of these quarterbacks, right? It's like your only pick of substance, and your options are reach for a quarterback and overdraft him. And if that guy is as bad as, you know, the sort of low years for quarterbacks tend to be, I mean, that's just torching a draft pick for nothing. Or you'd use that pick on one other spot, have nothing else to show for it, and you still don't have a quarterback. Like, just the Panthers are in a really rough spot relative to everybody else.
Last year, they were reportedly in every big-name quarterback discussion. I assume they'll be in it again, and they're going to have to be because of what you just described in the draft. So maybe it's get a Deshaun Watson, get whoever at quarterback, and then draft a first-round tackle, and got to make shrewd moves in free agency to piece together this roster. But again, we're not here to fix teams yet. We're going to fix them later. This is just laying out the problems. And the problems, there's some big ones in Carolina. All right, so that's 10 out of 16 NFC teams. Two NFC South teams done. The next one's the New Orleans Saints. Another team that Dennis Allen gets hired as the head coach. He wants to keep the culture, keep what Sean Payton built there in New Orleans. Allen did a great job with the defense these last couple of years. You know, the Saints are much like the Rams, Sam, like as far as just their own style of pushing the cap and using the credit card and the whole thing. But their biggest need this offseason is going to be quarterback as well, trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do because they're still trying to replace Drew Brees.
Yeah, so the Saints, you know, everybody looks at them and you're like, oh, this team's in salary cap hell every year. And they're not. Like, they'll free up all the space they need to. They can do the whole thing just by contract restructures. They don't even need to cut anybody. They will cut some people because that's how they do things as well. They get rid of a few guys whose contract number has gone too high for it to be worth retaining the next time around. And they roll. Like, they swap it out. They keep the conveyor belt going. So yeah, they're a very unusual team. Nobody else operates quite the way they do, but it's not the disaster scene that a lot of people seem to think it is every single year. The quarterback, though, is the big decision. Jameis Winston was playing okay, reasonably well, before he went down hurt. His numbers were very good. The Dennis Allen thing was a kind of continuity hire, right? We love what Sean Payton was doing. Let's try and keep that ball rolling. Even though you're bringing in a guy from the other side of from the defensive side of the ball, I don't know if they want to bring back Jameis because it was kind of working, right? And rather than dive into the unknown of just random quarterbacks and trying to replace from a complete position of unknown, maybe you just try and bring back Jameis and keep that continuity going, because like, the rest of the roster is not in that bad a shape. In theory, you get Michael Thomas back, having missed the whole season. Marquez Callaway is a useful member of a receiving core if he's not the number one. You still need to find sort of 2-3, you know, other receivers that can be parts of a receiving core. I think you can certainly attack that in the draft and bring in somebody. But if you find a QB, this is a team that could be reasonable, again, as you said, in a bad NFC South pretty quickly.
If you look at Jameis's career, he's been 12th in wins above replacement. He's been 10th. He's been 21st. He's been 19th. You know, some of the year he was 21st, he was suspended for a little bit. But you're talking about, let's say he ranks 10th to 20th, which is a big range. But as far as where he's adding value as a quarterback, if he's doing it on a similar contract where it's, you know, topping out at $5.5-6 million, you're essentially getting that rookie quarterback bonus for a guy. I don't want to say you know exactly what you're going to get from Jameis, but you kind of do. You're going to get some volatility. And he was probably on his way to that. He's intriguing to bring back because you could probably do it on the cheap again because of his injury. And I don't know if anybody's going to be dedicated to making Jameis their long-term starter, right? So that could be the play here for the Saints. And then you, you know, figure out all the cap situation everywhere else. And all of a sudden you've got a solid roster and maybe the best team in the NFC South.
I mean, honestly, the biggest selling point for Jameis is that his price tag was nothing. Like, right. He couldn't get a job. Like, his first gig with the Saints, he signed on for like $1 million as their QB3 and then ends up sort of waiting a year, you know, for his chance to replace Drew Brees. But like, if sort of half a dozen games at the start of this year didn't dramatically change that picture, the biggest benefit he might bring to New Orleans is A, familiarity and continuity, but B, the fact that it's not going to cost a bomb to keep him and do that. Like there's talk that like Marcus Mariota might actually command like a really big contract at quarterback. Like, I mean, if you have a choice of Jameis for almost nothing versus Marcus Mariota for a fortune, I mean, that Jameis, no brainer. So that might be the single biggest thing in his favor right now.
Similarly, if the alternative is draft a quarterback at 18 or even 50, with the unknown of the Sam Howells and Kenny Picketts of the world and Malik Willis's and the whole crew, you at least have a known commodity in Jameis. If you're going to get him for like anything under $5 or $6 million, again, it's like having a rookie quarterback, but like yeah. with a little bit more with clear expectations of his production. And maybe he doesn't end up having the long-term ability and you want to draft a guy anyway. But Jameis is an interesting bridge guy there, and receiver, I think, you know, regardless, has to be, you know, something that's addressed. Marquez Callaway, I don't think he's a number one. He's probably a low end two, you know, at best. He's probably Corey Davis-ish as much as he flashed that really nice ability in the preseason last year. So receiver's got to be high up on the priority list as well here.
Yep, agreed.
Anything else for the Saints? I mean, just depth across the roster. I think they have the ability to bring back a lot. Marcus Williams is going to hit free agency again at safety, so maybe replenishing there. But again, they've done a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that the Saints do every year because they do that run of sort of clearing out some cap space and, you know, replacing some players and the cutting the likes of Emmanuel Sanders and these guys whose contract number has crept up a little bit. And sure, you'd like to keep them around, but it's probably more smart to get rid of them and rely on your ability to replace that guy. Those are the players they need to sort of restock. So they're going to lose a few players. They need to bring in some depth almost across the board on defense and replace a couple of key pieces. I think that's basically just their story. The other issue is their offensive line is not, it's not a disastrous state. It's not a desperate situation, but it's gone from being one of the best offensive lines in the NFL to all of a sudden kind of being a problem. Teron Armstead is going to be a free agent. He's been an elite left tackle when he's been healthy, but that's become a bigger question mark than it has in the past. That interior trio, Andres Pete, is on big money and has never really played well. I'm not quite sure why that ever happened. Cesar Ruiz, their first-round pick, hasn't really panned out yet either. All of a sudden, that offensive line does need some remedial work or some patchwork to make sure that doesn't fall to pieces completely.
All right, so QB, receiver, and the O-line in New Orleans, definitely top priority this offseason. Let's go to the Bucs. Last year at this time, they were getting the band back together. Now the needs are plentiful. Now it starts at quarterback, Tom Brady retiring, so we have no idea what the Bucs are going to do. Blaine Gabbert's also not under contract either, so only Kyle Trask under contract here for the Bucs. But you also have receiver question marks as Chris Godwin hits free agency, also coming off an injury. Rob Gronkowski is technically going to be a free agent and probably going to retire, I think, with Brady. Edge rusher is a place, you know, opposite. I guess you got Tryon Shoyinka, but safety with Jordan Whitehead, cornerback with Carlton Davis. There are players to replace here with the Bucs.
Yeah, they got the band back together, and now without Tom Brady, you're probably not going to see that happening again. You're going to see a lot of these guys that are hitting free agency actually going to go test free agency and see what the market brings. I think they're going to need some work. Receiver could be a pretty major area of concern if Godwin does depart, and it leaves you with basically just Mike Evans and, you know, Cameron Brate as the two guys that are holdovers. they didn't seem to, Tom Brady didn't seem to trust the lower guys on the depth chart, the likes of Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson and Cyril Grayson and Jalen Darden, who they drafted. None of those guys stepped up. Now, maybe without Tom Brady, those guys can step up into a bigger role and potentially be number two or number three receivers to a Mike Evans and be better players than they've looked so far. But right now, that looks like a potential area of weakness. The offensive line has been really, really good the last 2 years under Brady. They remember they draft Tristan Wirfs, and that kind of completed the set. And then that starting five has played almost the entire time that Brady has been there. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to lose a couple of those guys, at least on paper, to free agency. You need to rebuild that and make sure that that offensive line remains a strength for the next quarterback, whoever it's going to be. And then, yeah, like the defense, it's just going to need a couple of starters replaced. So you probably do need another edge rusher. Joe Tryon Chayinka actually played a lot this year. Wasn't really supposed to, but injuries opened up a lot of opportunity for him. He played quite a lot of snaps. Never really did much with them, though. Like, you thought sort of initially, maybe you just need to up his playing time and start to see that athleticism, that speed, and the hustle play off. And it just didn't. Like, he just never generated pressure. Raw guy, a guy we expected to take some time, you know, in year two would be his year based off his projection coming into the NFL. So that's still a realistic thing. But, you know, you would be concerned at how little he showed from a pass rushing standpoint in year one. And maybe you do need to keep hammering at that position and make sure that you're not going to fall off there.
Defensive line, too, in general, opposite or next to Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh back to free agency, William Golston. Plus, they were just getting old in general. So defensive line needs help. And then the other part, you know, if you go back and say, how did the Bucs win the Super Bowl? Yeah, Brady and Gronk and Antonio Brown and all that stuff. But they had done such a good job building that secondary for a few years with the, you know, in the draft. As Carlton Davis hits free agency, as I said earlier, Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting get to the end of their contracts, just replenishing the youth in the secondary. And I'm not saying you got to – they just did a really nice job of continuing to draft corners and draft safeties. And they had all those guys on first contracts kind of peaking in that 2020 season when they made that run. And that's starting to fall apart a little bit. So, yeah, the Bucks have a lot of work to do on paper because and I think they're just going to look different. Everything that looked like a strength, receiving core, secondary, depth on the defensive line, all of that stuff needs attention in free agency or the draft.
And, oh, by the way, they probably need a quarterback to replace Tom Brady.
And so that's the other – the same question. These are how – do we want to be the best team in the NFC South or do we want to start from scratch? And Bruce Arians maybe – at the end of his run, are they going to be aggressive looking for a Derek Carr, looking for an established quarterback? And then if that's the case, then all the more reason why you have to get that wide receiver too, whether it's Chris Godwin or someone else. You have to, you know, secure the offensive line, and it's going to be compelling and captivating in Tampa Bay to see where they go. But far more need, they had a lot of needs last year at this time, but they got them all back. It's going to be different this time around.
And I think at this point, there's just an assumption that Kyle Trask is not going to be the guy, even though, I mean, I quite like Kyle Trask as a prospect coming out. I thought the second round was the right kind of place for him to go.
He had a year to sit. He could be the guy. He could be. It opens up the ability to, you know, first contract guy, you open up these other spots.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I liked him as a prospect. He went in the right kind of range, I think. They got a chance for him to learn behind Tom Brady for a year. But they're going to tell you, like, pretty much immediately whether that's an option or not. Like, they're the team that had a chance to watch him every day for a year in meeting rooms, in practices, whatever. If it never occurs to them, like, that Kyle Trask can be the starter next year, then it's probably not happening for him, you know, ever. But for now, he is a potential option. I mean, there's literally no point in drafting him where they drafted him if they're not going to hand him the starting job right now, right? Because he wasn't the primary backup last year. Blaine Gabbert was the guy that would go in if Tom Brady was ever going to miss some time. So his only purpose was to be a successor to Tom Brady whenever he decided to hang him up. Now's the time. Tom Brady just walked away. If it isn't Kyle Trask's job now, then you just wasted that draft pick.
I liked the flyer on Trask, too. The one thing about him, though, don't love his arm, doesn't have great velocity. You usually want high-velocity guys in a Bruce Arians system, so there might not even be a a scheme fit here with how often the Bucks like to throw the ball down the field. We'll see, though. But the Bucks, a lot of needs this offseason. That's 12 of the NFC teams, I believe, that are down. I think we hit everybody in the East, North, and South. Let's move on to the NFC West. We'll start with the Arizona Cardinals. And I don't know what's happening here. But Kyler Murray unfollowing the Arizona Cardinals on Instagram. Is quarterback in need in Arizona?
Is he going to baseball?
I mean, if he's smart. Like, who doesn't want to go on those 6 to 8 hour bus trips, sometimes worse, and, you know, playing 150 games in 160 days? Who doesn't want to do that right now?
So that's the thing,
that's
right?
Kyler would be in the minors.
He was a high end. He was a high draft pick by, who was it? The A's, right? Was that the team?
Oakland A's. Yeah, good work.
Yeah. But he's not. I mean, you don't walk from here into the majors, right? He's going to have to do what you did, right? And start busting it around the country playing for the whatever those jackass teams that you played for were, right?
Fresno Grizzlies.
Yeah. Right. Like, he's not walking in. He's not walking into the major league bullpen. He's going to have to go on the bus with all the crappy teams and, like, earn a per diem or whatever.
It takes a little time, you know. You gotta earn your way up no matter what. But you got to, you know, it takes reps, man, as a hitter especially.
And remember, like, he hasn't had the monster payday yet, right? Like, you could construct an argument that you can have those couple of crappy years on the bus, you know, before you get the big majors payday. If you've already had if you had the $100 million contract from the NFL and you got a ton of money sitting in the bank, I mean, I'm not saying he's destitute or anything, but he hasn't had the second deal that, you know, would set you, your kids, your grandkids and their kids up for life and enable you to spend a couple of years earning nothing in the minors. Like, if he decided that, all right, I'm out of here, I'm going to play baseball now, it would be a significant risk and, you know, decline in the lavish lifestyle.
So are we just making too big of a leap here, too much of an assumption that that's why?
Probably.
He's unfollowed them on Instagram? Like, or is he just upset with the organization? Does he want to be traded? What's actually happened?
He's, like, purged any mention of the Cardinals from his Instagram, which in today's world, you know, means what's the Facebook thing? Like, it's complicated, you know, from back in the day. Like, the relationship status has changed, right? That's what's happening with Kyle. And I guess I would imagine the most logical explanation is this is, like, agitating for a new contract a year early, right? He wants to be one of those guys that gets the big $100 million deal as soon as humanly possible. He doesn't want to wait around, you know, he doesn't want to be where Lamar Jackson is right now, right? Going into the last year of that deal, still without the giant money, right? Where's my cash? Josh Allen got his deal. You know, like, where's mine, right? I'm a unanimous MVP. Where's the bank? Like, where's my chunk of cash? I think that's what Kyler Murray's doing here. Is like, all right, I'm not happy with this. Pay the man.
I feel like there's less passive aggressive ways of doing that. But anyway, let's pretend Kyler Murray's still on the roster. As far as needs go for the Arizona Cardinals, receivers opposite DeAndre Hopkins, they signed AJ Green just for the 1 year deal. Looking back, AJ Green, like, for $6 million, they got pretty good production out of AJ Green, but. Christian Kirk also hits free agency. Max Williams injured and hitting free agency. Zach Ertz. I mean, the entire group of pass catchers needs to be replenished. And then the big one on the defensive side of the ball is Chandler Jones hitting free agency, plus J.J. Watt just getting a little bit older. So I'm looking at pass rusher as a big one, pass catcher as a big one, and then they could use a guard or the next center perhaps there in Arizona.
I also wouldn't sort of fall into the trap of thinking that corner is fine. Like, that corner looked like the biggest weakness they had on paper heading into last season. And somehow they made it work despite a bunch of guys that didn't look like they had any business playing at this level. Like, we like Byron Murphy in the slot anyway, but, like, Robert Alford hadn't played football in a while. Marco Wilson was a mid to low round rookie. He wasn't expected to be very good. And, like, none of these guys graded particularly well. Robert Alford's grade was fine, but it was in the 60s. Marco Wilson graded under 50. Byron Murphy was under 60. It was cheap, and they patched it together. And because that defensive scheme is reasonably creative and they were able to do a lot, it worked. But you would still look at that group and say that is a below-par collection of cornerbacks and still needs addressing.
Yeah, the Cardinals had one of the lowest run defense grades too. So there, it is more corner. I agree. Everything in the front seven, though, I know they invested a lot at linebacker the last couple of years, but their entire defensive line, I think, can use an upgrade. Even if you're just adding run stop specialists, but replacing Chandler Jones as a pass rusher as well. So I think those are the big ones for Arizona. Definitely want to see what their plan is at receiver, though. Again, I liked the AJ Green move. Looking back, I didn't think it would pay off the way it did. I think it's probably some combination of getting youth in there, the draft, but also figuring out free agency and what the best complements are to DeAndre Hopkins, because that's when this offense took its next step this year, was adding yeah. Rondale and adding AJ Green and Christian Kirk being their slot receiver. Let's not let, you know, Kyler Murray unfollow us on Instagram and all that stuff. Let's keep him happy with as many playmakers as possible.
I mean, the other thing they need to think about is that, like, as good as DeAndre Hopkins has been, he is on an ungodly sum of money at this point. And if you can find a new number one receiver, it potentially gives you the flexibility to maybe move on from him at some point. Because, you know, like, DeAndre Hopkins is on so much money right now that it's breaking the wide receiver market, right? Guys like Davante Adams are saying, I want new Hopkins money, and there isn't a team in the NFL that wants to give it to him because the Hopkins contract is so out of whack that it's like nobody else wants to get into that territory. So Arizona is the one team that's on the hook for that. They're paying him QB money. I mean, that's the reality of it. And as good as he is, that's kind of over the top, you know?
And if you do keep him, it does mean you have to, you know, offset that with cheap in other spots at receiver. So,
yeah, it's got to be the draft.
Let's assume Kyler Murray's back. Their biggest need, I think, is, you know, friends for Kyler on the offense, but also the perimeter and the trenches on defense. So, a couple
friends
spots
for Kyler.
Friends for Kyler. Let's go with the Los Angeles Rams Super Bowl team, but we could look forward to this offseason. Guys like Von Miller hitting free agency. The underrated Obo Okoronkwo also hitting free agency. So edge rusher for like the ninth straight year, I think, is going to be a question for the Rams. They paid a lot of money to Leonard Floyd on one side, but I think you're seeing the value of when you do have a Von Miller there. So I think having another good edge rusher should be a priority for the Rams. Starting corner Darius Williams hits free agency this offseason, plus Brian Allen and Austin Corbett up front as far as the offensive line goes.
Yeah, they have a really tricky balancing act to do. The area, I think, that has the capacity to derail them the most is the offensive line. This team, A, has a really tight correlation to like how well the offensive line has performed in the Sean McVay era as how good they've been. When the offensive line has been great, the team has been great. When the offensive line has been bad, the team hasn't been nearly as good. This year, it's been good. But when you look at that group and how it's comprised, Andrew Whitworth is the only one that's on kind of reasonably big money, right? Rob Havenstein is also on a pretty healthy contract, but the interior trio and the primary tackle backup, Joseph Noteboom, those guys are all on like nothing. I mean, three of those four are on under $1 million. Austin Corbett is on like 1.9. These guys are not, they've been able to get this really good offensive line play basically out of first contract guys. And, you know, really low-end players in terms of financial commitment that have played well. Now, a couple of those guys are going to hit free agency, and Whitworth isn't getting any younger. At some point, the 40-year-old isn't going to be able to play left tackle at a really high level. They need to start thinking about that offensive line, and because of the way they deploy all their resources, you know, you trade away the draft picks, you go looking for established players, you now have this like really low margin for error. It's a really tight window to hit, a really small target to be able to replace multiple guys on the offensive line with reasonable players that are not going to cause a significant decline in production and in overall play from that group. So to me, that's the Rams' biggest challenge this offseason. Yeah, it would be great to bring back OBJ. It would be great to bring back Von Miller. But the single biggest problem you're facing right now is arguably three-fifths of an offensive line that you need to make sure don't turn into problem areas next year.
Yeah, it's a great point, the O-line being something that they can't let 2019 happen, right, where they just completely fell off the map,
right,
and the offense couldn't function. So offensive line, I like it. I think that makes a lot of sense. The other thing we'll hear a lot this week, too, it's like, yeah, the Rams go all in, but look at all these, you know, mid-round. Look at Cooper Kupp, who they found in the third round and all that stuff. And we keep hammering home. Can they keep that going, right? Can they continue to hit on those mid-round picks? Because that's where they're going to have to fill these needs. You at least need starting caliber players that you're going to find there, right? Like Ernest Jones, who's, you know, starting at linebacker for them now. They have to continue to do that. And even if they're low-end starters, you still have to find starting caliber players, for the Rams. So their team-building strategy, again, it's unique. And O-line, I think, definitely needs to be a big focus this offseason. Two more teams, yeah. Sam. 14 out of 16, I believe. San Francisco 49ers. We'll do another audit at the end. San Francisco 49ers and their needs. Jimmy Garoppolo almost certainly going to be gone. Trey Lance going to be taken over at quarterback. Laken Tomlinson, Daniel Brunskill, couple starting guards there. So, you know, they're both going to be gone or, you know, hitting free agency. So that needs to be addressed. Jaquiski Tartt gone and, you know, at safety, hitting free agency, K'Wan Williams. So I think secondary and guard, just for specific filling starter roles, that's probably the starting point here for the 49ers.
Yeah, agreed. Secondary, I think, is probably the primary area of need. This offense has a track record of getting plus play out of offensive linemen. So I think guard is a need, interior offensive line. I kind of like their ability to be able to grab guys, plug them in, and then be okay. Corner, I think, is a major issue. Obviously, we got one good year out of Jason Verrett before he went back to being perpetually injured. I imagine they'll roll the dice on him again because what the hell? Like, it's cheap. It's for the year where he does pan out and stay healthy. He's still a really good player, but you need to have contingency. You need to have a better bet than that going forward. They desperately do need a cornerback. Even Emmanuel Mosley, the sort of one guy that is going to hang around and be an incumbent starter and remain, you could easily upgrade over Mosley going forward as well. So the back seven generally, I think, is an area that they just need to throw some resources at in a significant way.
Defensive line is losing a lot of depth through too, with Arden Key, Maurice Hurst, DJ Jones, all three guys hitting free agency. Arden Key, I was actually just watching him for our free agent write-ups this week. It is amazing how much his body type has just changed from the 238-pounder. I don't know what he weighs in now, but he's a lot, you know, he's bulked up a lot over these last 4 years, rushing from the interior. The Niners defense has been at their best this year and in 2019 when they had, you know, 6 and 7 edge rushers, right? Just pass rushers that you could trust. Arden Key, DJ Jones, Maurice Hurst didn't play this year, but all of those guys no longer there. So depth on the defensive line, I think, also needs to be something that they look at. I'm with you, though. Secondary is the biggest one because, to me, it's still amazing they made it to the NFC Championship with that group, beating the Packers and beating some of the, you know, the Rams the way they did until the NFC Championship, while piecing it together with a secondary that just wasn't very good on paper.
I mean, a big part of it was that depth on the defensive line, right? Guys like Arden Key, and they were getting a ton of pressure late in the season and into the playoffs, which eases the burden on the secondary. So definitely you need to get better in the secondary as well. But it's a good point that those defensive depth players are important as well because they help that secondary. And not just defensive depth, but like depth across the board. You know, we talked on the depth chart that I've never seen a team that looks like Chicago's where like just nobody is coming back. Half the roster is out of contract. San Francisco, like everybody that isn't a starter essentially is out of contract. Like their entire depth, defense and offense, needs major work because nobody is returning as of right now.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the attention is going to be defensive side of the ball, then figuring out what they do at those guard positions offensively. And then the Seattle Seahawks, to wrap it up in the NFC, presumably, team number 16 out of 16. The Seahawks, you know, I'll repeat what I said about the Bears, right? I mean, this is a roster that has just slowly gotten worse. They don't have that first-round pick, you know, still because of that Jamal Adams trade. So Seattle has some work to do just to maintain where they are, right? Like on paper, Russell Wilson throwing to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. That's a great starting point. But the offensive line is a perennial issue, plus 3/5 of their O-line hits free agency. They haven't rushed the passer very well the last couple of years. And when they finally found a corner this past year, DJ Reed, well, he's hitting free agency again. So secondary, defensive line, offensive line, another playmaker for Russ if he's back. I mean, there's a lot to do here, I think, in Seattle.
Yeah, and there is that last part, right? The idea that Russell Wilson might have just had enough and be done with this. And if Russell Wilson leaves, obviously the whole thing is just – the whole thing's done. I mean, if Russell Wilson leaves, either you need to find some other, like, miracle answer, a quarterback, or this whole thing might as well get blown up and start over. At that point, they become, I think, a complete and total rebuild job. But if Russell Wilson is there, I think this is the year you finally have to say, yeah, okay, let's really attack that offensive line, because – you know, Dwayne Brown made a huge difference to this group when you traded for him and you brought him over. He finally started to decline this year. He reached that age, and he's hitting free agency. And there's two more guys hitting free agency. And the two guys you're left with are not exactly superstars. So they need to just go, look, Russell Wilson's already angling for this anyway. He's making noises about it. The guy, the good player we had on the offensive line is leaving. We need to dedicate some major resources to this for the maybe the first time in the Russell Wilson time. They need to attack that. And then defense across the board, it's another one of those teams that was once a great defense and has just slowly eroded and chipped away at it, like the Vikings, like the Eagles, like the Bears. These teams have just not been able to retain the quality personnel that they had that once made them so amazing. And it's maybe been a longer decline for Seattle. And they still have a couple of players there that are really good. You know, Bobby Wagner is still playing fantastically. I think Jordan Brooks has sort of shown signs that he's moving in the right direction. Puna Ford is a good player, but there's not enough. Like, Jamal Adams was maybe better last year than he was the first time they brought him over, even though he played less as a like designated pass rusher. But that group needs a total overhaul. It just needs an injection of talent top to bottom. So they have a lot of work to do.
The other tricky part here is they've got Tyler Lockett making a ton of money and DK Metcalf now heading into the last year of his contract, right? So he's only on that four-year rookie contract being a second rounder. Do you want to have, you know, say $17 to $22 million locked up for each of those receivers? Who, again, the starting point of those two plus Russ, you know, should be that's as good as it gets around the NFL on paper. I know it hasn't worked out since the second half of 2020, but you at least want to probably keep that intact. And then you still want to say, well, yeah, we drafted Dwayne Eskridge with one of our only three first round draft picks last year. We still need a third option, right? We still need so that's what puts Seattle into even more of a bind here, is you might have to pay DK, but you still want more as far as pass catchers go. You do have the offensive line that needs to be addressed. All of their top couple tight ends are hitting free agency, and their two starting corners are hitting free agency. And corner's been a position, much like what the 49ers have just kind of stitched it together the last couple of years. That's what the Seahawks have done too, and they haven't been the same, man. You're always going to be looking back at that Legion of Boom. But they just have not been the same in the secondary over these last few years when you don't, you know, hit on a Richard Sherman in the fifth round or whatever it might be. So secondary, Quandre Diggs also hits free agency, their free safety. So secondary, I think, is huge. More receiving talent. And then, yeah, the entire defensive line, they have just not rushed the passer effectively with four-man rushes these last couple seasons.
Yeah, the DK Metcalf kind of question, it feels a lot like what we talked about at the start of this podcast with Dallas. You know, you sort of say, well, do you really want to have that amount of money tied up in just the trio of Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and DK Metcalf? Probably not. But on the other hand, like, the alternative is right now the only good thing you have going for you is that trio, that combination, like Russell Wilson to those two really good receivers. Russell Wilson, remember, like, the most important thing in this entire organization, top to bottom, is Russell Wilson, who's already kind of pissed off with how everything is going. This just feels like one you almost have to just say, well, the alternative is worse, right? Do you want to have that money committed to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? No, probably not. On the other hand, the alternative is saying to Russell Wilson, who's already kind of hacked off with what you're doing, I'm going to take away one of the two good things you have going for you because it's not worth the money and we're going to throw it somewhere else. I don't see how you can get away with doing that at this point. So I think you have to bite that bullet, pay DK Metcalf whatever it's going to take to keep him around. and hope that that's enough to keep Russell Wilson happy and then figure out some way of improving the protection and the defense and everything else. Like, it's just another one. Like, you're already in this terrible situation. You're not making it better by like one slightly shrewd move, you know, to play the odds and play the value. At this point, you have to just say, screw it. We're already headed down this route. Let's keep going.
Or with a team that's already got a depleted roster, you only drafted 3 times last year. You're only scheduled to draft 6 times this year. It might just be time to trade Russell Wilson and get back some assets and go from there.
Wow.
But this isn't, we're not fixing the teams right now. We're just presenting the issues. One issue you won't have is our discount over at pff.com. NFL pod is your promo code. If that doesn't work, use super 25. You get 25% off any PFF subscription. I would use NFL pod first, super 25 second. 25% off any PFF subscription. Let me go back through the NFC. We hit on the Tennessee Titans here today to round out the AFC. Cardinals, Falcons, Panthers, Bears, Cowboys, Lions, Packers, Rams, Vikings, Saints, Giants, Eagles, 49ers, Seahawks, Bucks, and Commanders. I think we got them all. Didn't forget.
I think anything. So.
All right, great. If we did, we apologize. It's not on purpose. We're just trying to help here. Anything else, Sam, to wrap it up? Hope you enjoy your time out there, buddy.
I just want to make a little quick comment about the setup here on Radio Row, right? I feel a little bit exposed, right? The back is to the room, right? You know the way when a mafia member goes in to eat at a restaurant, he finds a space in the corner where he can have his back to the walls, he's protected, and he has his eyes on everything else, right? He can see what's going down. This is the opposite of that. My eyes are to the wall, which does me no good whatsoever, and anything could be happening behind me, and I don't know what's going on. I don't like it. That's all I'm saying.
Luckily, I can at least see it. I'll let you know if you're going to get whacked. But I don't think that's a great – yeah, I'm with you, man. That's it's an insecure feeling. You're back to everyone. And the media – you can't trust media. It's a bunch of crazy people over there.
My problem is that the lag on the internet here is sufficient that you could be like yelling, you know, duck, incoming whack, and this, I won't hear it. You'll like stutter. I'll be done before the message comes through. And we're, you know,
guy behind you in a backpack. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah. He looks suspicious.
He's already
sketchy.
Gone. Well, anyway.
That's my only comment. I'm just not. I feel exposed. I don't like it.
Yeah, that's understandable. Well, best of luck out there. Again, hope you don't get whacked. We'll be back tomorrow previewing the Super Bowl. That's Bengals-Rams.
The big game.
One game. The big game. And then hopefully you grab a couple interviews. Maybe Bobby Wagner's out there. Try to find Bobby Wagner for an interview.
How funny would that be if we run into him in the Super Bowl? That's when we finally get the interview.
And he's still so busy that you can't sit down with him. He's just wall to wall. His publicist already has him booked, and we can't even get him. You're in the same room. Well, go find Bobby. See what you can do. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back again tomorrow previewing Super Bowl 56.